party elections question time. What do your candidates stand for?
Welcome to your second episode of SU Election Question Time. Yesterday we were joined by your president candidates, and today we have your candidates for equal opportunities and welfare. So I've got Kat, Miles and JR here. Hi guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So the first topic I kind of want to talk about here is obviously as welfare officers. A very big topic, I think, particularly with this year's elections, is kind of mental health at universities and welfare services on campus. Obviously, all of you address this in your manifestos. JR, just firstly, over to you. You talk about like the most disadvantaged groups or people on your manifesto. Who do you kind of mean by this?
So I kind of do name it in the manifesto. I'm talking specifically kind of about BME students, LGBT plus students, mature students, working students, international students, and students who just kind of and working students as well, students who come from kind of poorer backgrounds, students who don't fit into that typical kind of heterosexual white middle class person that comes to uni. That often is kind of the place that university attracts. Kind of anybody who doesn't really feel like they fit into the norm is essentially who I'm talking about.
So what are your plans to like single these people out almost and help them?
I don't know if I like the word single out because that sounds quite intense, but what I would say is just kind of making provisions more for them. So I think it's a case of firstly sort of the way in which kind of services are publicized and spoken about needs to be done, not just in kind of areas and on campus halls. That needs to be rolled out to all areas of university, and that also includes kind of the self-catered halls, which is something I'm a big, you know. I just wanted to comment on that quickly.
Because you said about in your manifesto about having a sub-warden for three large halls, mm-hmm. and that this is a problem. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, in halls there are kind of tutors in halls. There's also a male and female welfare officer on JCRs. Mm-hmm. So there is kind of welfare within halls already. Yeah. It's not just these sub-wardens.
No, and I fully, totally appreciate that. And I totally appreciate that you have tutors and you have kind of other people. What I would say is that the reason I focus on the sub-warden issue is because it gives a sense of kind of leadership and somebody who's slightly more senior, who has that kind of control to be able to make the correct decisions for welfare. And it is that the case that you sort of there isn't that provision that exists for kind of self-catered halls to the same level that does for catered halls. It's the case that kind of there's not that leadership and that kind of grounding of somebody saying, yes, we'll do this. So the tutors and resident teams can come together and say, oh, we think we should do this about this problem. However, it's ultimately down to the subwarden. If the subwarden is dealing with an issue in SBC, an issue in Raleigh Park, an issue in Borgate Park, they're already split quite thin. It's one person who's also called the living out coordinator, and he does a lot. And ultimately, whenever I've gone to any kind of mental health or welfare thing, it's always been him. I've never seen anybody else from any representative of the hall in that kind of senior leadership position.
Okay. Well, I kind of want to open this up to everyone, really. Kind of going on from your point, JR, Kat, you talk about like making sure at least one member of society is welfare trained.
Yeah.
How effective do you think this actually is? And all of you can obviously answer this. Kat, I know you were welfare officer, on the JCR at Rutland. Like, how effective do you actually think kind of having welfare officers is? And if you do think it's ineffective, how would you guys change that?
Okay, so in terms of me being welfare officer in first year, I felt that we had training by the SU initially, but then there was kind of a lack of meeting up with the other welfare officers from the other halls, which I think would be something that'd be really useful, because for me, I sort of wasn't really sure the kind of limitations, or maybe like if we had meetings where we could meet with the other representatives and see what they're doing in their hall, what works, what people are going to. I feel that that would be something and be more of a community, rather than I was obviously on the JCR with other members, but my priority was welfare. So I felt that if I had more of a community with the other halls, with that as being the centre, I feel that that could be something that would be good. And then in terms of societies in general, I think a lot of students on the SU report on January 2018, that a lot of students say that they find students easier to speak to perhaps about maybe like how the welfare in a certain society and things like that. So I feel that if we had someone who was welfare trained on each of the committees, I feel that this would be, they would also have have the ability to organise more welfare events, whereas at the moment they're being told this is something you should do, but they don't necessarily know how to do that. So
Miles, kind of this is kind of commenting on your manifesto here, talking about a long-term plan for reducing suicide. As I asked Kat, like, how would you really implement that?
So a lot of my work I do at other universities, so I actually work with other universities looking at how they implement sort of early intervention strategies, because here at Nottingham we have an issue where we don't target an individual until their absolute crisis point, but there's nothing actually stopping them from getting to that point. So I've been working, well, not working with, but contacting and speaking to a woman called Claire Dickens, who works at the University of Wolves. She's put together a program called 3 Minutes to Save a Life, and what this does is that is a whole university approach into reducing instances of suicide firstly, and to destigmatising mental health. That plan has been rolled out to over 500 lecturers and faculty staff and over 2,000 students, and so a bit like Kat was saying, and having students more aware of welfare and sort of the interconnection and bridge between them is useful. But again, what that does is that it takes the pressure off of the university and it re-contributes to sort of the cycle of students supporting students, and like I said, who's supporting them. And so by making it a whole university-wide approach, and by destigmatizing it and using staff as sort of the forefront and the driving movement of it, that I think that would be a much better way to go about it, because at the moment we're not doing enough.
Do you think that that will kind of solve the issue of funding? Because we were speaking to the president candidates yesterday, and obviously, Miles, you mentioned this on your manifesto as well, about kind of councillors and kind of wanting to increase the number and stuff like that. But obviously, we know the university is cutting funding for stuff. The SU is cutting funding. It's really struggling to fund programmes. So do you think by having this kind of student-led programme, like you talked about, like students communicating, Kat, you said, students like to talk to students. Do you think that will tackle that problem of funding?
I just need to clarify, it isn't a student-led programme, it's a whole university approach, so that's staff and students. On the student front, it's optional how they do it at Wolves, so students have the option to be trained, but is mainly primarily focusing on staff. Your question was, sorry.
Okay, so where's the funding coming?
back to funding, a lot of people are sort of curious as to how are we going to fund it. The university is reluctant to funding. Fortunately, I've been lucky enough to sit down with the head of counselling, head of mental health here at the university, head of NHS mental health here at the university. And the problem isn't with can we get funding, it's about we need to put the right pressures on to get the funding, because a lot of people revert to, okay, can we have a reallocation of the budget? But no, that's not what we want, because by reallocating the budget, we're taking away from other services. And so what we need is to raise awareness so that we have a student body who's passionate about resolving this issue, in which the university would then have to cater to our needs and our demands. So around funding, a lot of people think that no is the final answer, but it's really not. It's about how much do we want it and how much can we make the university know that we want it.
JR, you also talk about funding for welfare services. So what is your plan?
So basically, I fully agree with Miles. I believe that it is just a case of us being complacent at times and saying, oh, no is no, and that's fine. What I believe is, we know that we have amazing donors who give lots of money to this university. I do believe that it's really important that we chat to them directly and say, look, it's lovely that you want to build this beautiful kind of pavilion amphitheatre, and the aesthetics is great, but when we are having a mental health crisis, it's not what we need. Put your name in a counselling service, put your name in a counselling building. That is where our core funding needs, because if we phrase it in the way, and it is genuinely this way, that we are in a mental health crisis, and without these services, students at the University of Nottingham will continue to end their lives, and they'll continue to be a mental health crisis. It sounds urgent because it is urgent, and it needs to be put across that way.
But how would you almost convince donors that that's where the money should go? Because obviously people donating money would like to see their name on a building.
Yeah, so again, it's about creating. So when I say, you know, you create a building, so you could have, you know, the Harry Dinojili counselling service that could exist as a building. So you could say to somebody, this, you know, there is a very deep crisis where students who are most in need are not fulfilling their academic potential and are not making the university a global university and the best university it can be, because the mental health support for them is not there. By contributing to this counselling service and having your name on this building, that I'm sure can look very nice, you will be able to help employ individuals who will be able to make this university a place where people really can truly excel and do well, and a place that you as a donor can say, I've helped contribute, this is my alma mater, this is somewhere where I went that I can be part of, that I know is excelling, because students aren't confined by their kind of mental health.
Obviously that's relying on donors giving their money, so I mean obviously if that doesn't happen, how would you approach that?
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things that my manifesto, I guess, as a person, I kind of believe in people, and I'm a bit of a positive person that way. So yeah, and absolutely, there's a chance that donors be like, well, why would I want to do this? It's not, you know, I can't see it. It's not, there's not a performance league for it. Like, what would be the point? I think in that case, it is just then saying to university that enough is enough, and that unless mental health funding is increased, people really need to start saying, well, this is now affecting my learning, this is affecting me going to lectures, and enough really is enough.
But I think that is, I think the university do know that.
I wouldn't agree with you. Sitting on those meetings, it's clear to see that a lot of the people that sit on the boards at the university are passionate about resolving this issue, but without the sort of student input, they're not sure how, because a lot of them will revert to either leaflets, campaigns, posters, websites, but it's like, without students actually engaging with people on those level, they really don't understand sort of the needs that we have. And then going back to what JR was saying about donors, at the end of the day, people, is business. So relationships are dependent on interest. So whether they're investing because they want to help mental health, or whether they're investing because they want to sort of have a good name, it's not unrealistic that donors would want to invest in sort of counselling and mental health services here at the university. In addition to that, it's not all about funding. Our university currently does run a counselling programme in which we do send postgraduate students out to Trent, to schools, to sort of be counsellors. And so why is it that we're not using our own students to sort of fill the gaps in the market that we need? So things like this, small shifts can make big changes.
No, that's a really interesting point about the kind of almost using students to help students. And I think going back to what you said, Kat, that is a really useful tool at the end of the day. Kind of talking about funding as well a bit more, Kat, you talk about having like increased sexual health screenings and like lighting on campus. Once again, how do you plan on making it known to the university that this is where the funding needs to be directed?
I think the fact that, going back to the Students' Union survey, this was something that was brought up, that students actually do feel on campus that they feel like unsafe walking across the downs. And I know it has been explored before, but there must be things that we can do to make it better, like even around the lake, the Trent Lake. Like, there must be a way that we can make people feel safe on campus, especially when first years are spending, that's where they spend most of their time and things like that. So I think, again, bringing that to the attention of the SU, because it will be from the SU budget and things like that. So yeah, reallocating that and bringing it to something that sexual health screenings is so important, and the fact that our NHS service on campus have had cuts to that, that is something that then the university need to address, because that is our university service.
And also, you, quite a key point on your manifesto is about having free sanitary products in libraries and buildings like that. Do you not think that that obviously runs the risk of people just taking them all?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we've discussed with people, because like when I was building my manifesto, it was mainly firstly talking to students, seeing what they want, and then obviously using my experience on like the welfare network and as a welfare rep to then see how that could be possible and also be funded. So I think to start with, we could look at how we could introduce them around exam time, because this is the time when students spend a lot of time in the library and they may be more forgetful, like packing for the day and things like that. So introducing it then, and also maybe if we have to have a system to start with where we have like give them out as the little pick-me-ups that we hand around campus around exam times in bags. So if they have to be handed around like that, so that all the students kind of get an equal amount to start with, and then seeing how we can work on it and improve on it to make it more of a service.
But like, once again, where I don't know necessarily if the SU would see that as where the funding needs to go.
So with, for example, with our welfare network, we have got a budget for things like that. And that's something that if students think that's a priority, then the budget can go towards that. Like going around exam time to start with, buying packets of sanitary products is part of the budget that we would be able to use for the welfare network of people, as they've said to me when I've talked to students, that they think is a priority.
JR Miles, you obviously don't mention sexual health in your manifestos at all. Do you think that it is an issue that needs to be addressed?
I'll go first. I don't think it's... So the reason I haven't addressed it is just because I feel that at the moment there are slightly more like super pressing concerns to deal with. My manifesto, I think, very much focuses on sort of suicide and ways in which we can do that, and funding and increasing welfare for all, and focuses a lot on the other aspect of this world which people don't talk about, which is equal opportunities, because again I feel like that's something that's not really focused on. So what I would say is that as someone who does, you know, have a sexual health, I do believe it is really, really important. It's certainly something that I would be willing to work on once other funding is in place. I feel like if you can get the funding for other aspects of kind of mental health, then you can increase that funding to other areas. You can say, well, look, this funding is working, this is making your student population happier, it can then be extended on to other areas like sexual health. I do think it's disgraceful that the university is not tackling that directly, but we can't do everything, unfortunately.
Do you not think that it is a massive issue at universities?
I think it's an absolutely massive issue, and I want to make that really clear. Again, though, my manifesto, like, I could cover everything from safety in Lenten to I mean, because if you think about it with welfare, fundamentally, at the end of the day, everything becomes under the remit of welfare. Somebody not being able to submit an assignment on time, somebody not attending a lecture because there wasn't lecture capture and struggling with that, sport not being accessible, all of this has a welfare aspect because it's dealing with people's mental health. So I could put everything down on my manifesto, but that's not what I would stand for. It's certainly the case that I definitely, if I did get the position, would fight for kind of sexual health screening and for there to be increased awareness of like the cost of sanitary products and helping the university help students get those. It is not the core of my manifesto. I do believe it's a massive problem. The university has lots of massive problems.
Miles?
I think how Kat hit the nail on the head with sexual health. I think how it's something that both JR and I didn't really look into too much. And I could only apologise for that. At the end of the day, with a manifesto, it's only so long and you could only include so many points. So for me and JR, something that resonates with us and the people that we've spoken to is mental health and suicide awareness. To the people that we spoke to, they're the most pressing issues because lives are lost over this. Of course, there are lives lost over sexual health, but in the current climate of mental health growing at a rate of 10% a year in university student population alone, I feel it's something that I wanted to address more. I don't want this to be taken as a complete disregard for sexual health, as I do completely believe that there is a lot more to be done in that field as well. And no matter which one of us threw in, I think how just our manifestos together, we can learn a lot from each other and how we could progress and how we can move forward. Being a man, again, it was sort of like a, when I saw the sanitary towels thing, it was like, oh my word, like I don't even think about sort of the issues sometimes that females go across, or it's all about who we are as people and individuals. It's not the my lack of experience with sanitary towels and sort of females and things like that has been shown in my manifesto, but I don't want it to be seen as ignorance. I don't want it to be seen as a disregard, but it's so lovely that we have like three-way race of which we all cover sort of different issues and just with as much passion as the other. So the best thing that whoever you vote for, whether it be me, JR or Kat, the other two would be able to sort of invest their thoughts and ideas to make sure that everything's covered, which I think is so important to say.
Welcome back to Question Time with your Equal Opportunity and Welfare candidates. We were just talking there kind of about mental health services and sexual health services as well at university. I want to move on now to talk about kind of security. Kat, obviously you mentioned campus security in your manifesto. However, when we were talking to the president candidates yesterday, all of them spoke a lot about Lenten and safety in Lenten. I know obviously this is more an issue for community. However, I do think it also links into welfare because obviously, like, we talk a lot about first years moving away from home, but second year, of course, you're moving into your first house. And if it's in a place where your neighbour's house is getting robbed every other day, it is quite scary. And I think that does affect your mental health. So, of course, none of you have actually mentioned this on your manifestos, but I'm interested to hear what your opinions are about this and how you would tackle this.
I think we'd have to divide the issue into two. So, like you're saying, a lot of that part is sort of to do with community officer, but I think it's important to work with the community officer in sort of finding a solution for it. So the direct sort of issue of like if something happens, who do you go to, or all of that sort of thing, I think that's within the community officer's remit. But sort of the impact of what's happened there, or sort of the effects of, is a bit like in restorative justice, it's not so much about the crime, it's about the impact of the crime on the victim. And so it's the same here. It's not about what's necessarily happened, it's about the impact on what's happened on the victim. And like you're saying, it all sort of leads back and threads back into mental health. And so if you feel unsafe, that could be sort of cast as anxiety, and which does come under our remit, and which does feed back into what we all want to achieve here, which is a better welfare system here in Nottingham. So it's not really sort of jumping past your answer, but it's trying to separate the two components of it.
JR and Kat?
So one thing I'd like to say is that, like, I fully appreciate the importance of Lenten. However, I often feel that other areas are ignored as a result of that.
I think it's more that you cannot deny the fact that crime rates in Lenten are just through the roof. Within the country as well.
I fully appreciate that. So I think that when we look at Lenten specifically, I think Miles does bring up an excellent point that obviously community has to focus on kind of the immediate reporting. I would say that one thing that definitely could be done that needs to kind of be increased from a kind of a welfare point of view is sort of the way in which we pressurise the SU to respond to events when they happen. It's been spoken about a fair bit, the idea that we increase SU presence in Lenten. And again, I think that welfare needs to say, okay, well, as soon as, you know, a robbery or crime is reported, having somebody from the university there and giving that, at least that option to people who've, you know, had that happen to them, or not even just a robbery, if they've been mugged on the street, if they've had their car, you know, taken, if people have been affected in that immediate vicinity, or just generally, to offer people to say, okay, we'll send out a team to come chat to you. I think that that's something that welfare can do.
But do you think that's really feasible? Considering, I mean, the police can't even manage to do that, so why would the university be able to?
I think I'm aware, obviously, when we talk about feasibility, we have to be aware of the climate we live in and et cetera, and, you know, that certain things aren't done. What I would say is that it's very interesting when you look at other areas of the university, how quickly, you know, if a sports bus breaks down, how quickly we can have a new one out. I think it's very, very interesting that there are certain areas, just an example, there are certain areas that are prioritised over others, and it does genuinely feel like that. I do believe that if we more evenly split funding, that if we as the university said this is what we need, especially if a student's in a lot of distress, then yeah, I do believe it's feasible. I believe that it's not just about kind of it's about saying this is something that we want, let's push for it. If sports, if education, if community can do the same thing, it's not good enough for us to just say let's continue to make things better. It's saying hold on, what can be changed, what can be directed, because this matters, because we're talking about lives and welfare.
Miles?
Again, I think what we do need to look at is the work of our current community officer, Jacob, who's done an absolutely amazing job. Say, for instance, things like hate crime, that made a lot of people from ethnic minority groups feel really uncomfortable on campus, really unsafe, but has opened up a hate crime reporting centre. So thing like we can make changes in order to sort of aid where we're at. I sat down with Eugene and Amari, who run Not Safe Space. It's sort of like a growing page, you've probably seen it. And I was speaking to them about, okay, so we've now got a page where we're bringing crime, we're bringing sort of certain situations to light. What are your guys' sort of aims and goals to do with this? And what they really want to do is make it sort of like a hub of signposting, if that makes sense, and being able to point people in the right directions and point them to the relevant services in order to help. But in order for them to grow, they need support and help from the SU. I spoke to them quite extensively about their plans, and it's something that groups like these and our other student-run services, who are absolutely amazing, you've got our night lines, night owls, and now Not Safe Space is sort of in that grey area of becoming affiliated. As long as we're supporting them, that is sort of that. Until we, like, either three of us put together sort of a more sort of sturdy plan and something that's more rigid and could be sort of like manipulated and all of that good stuff. I can't think of the word, sorry. I think we do have to just keep relying on sort of the resilience of our students, but that can't be a long-term thing. That could only be temporary until we resolve it.
Kat?
So about your original question, which was about Lenten and safety in Lenten, something which was quite interesting, when I was talking to the Night Owls, I was saying to them about the links with student clubs and whether they felt that there was anything more that could be done in order, because they do such a great job in supporting students to get back to Lenten and to campus when they're kind of at their most vulnerable, maybe they've lost their friends in the club and things like that. And I think they said they've already got some great links with the student nights, but something that could be done more is to maybe like make use of the publicity pages of the clubs.
But not necessarily about clubs, more just like... not the like walking home from drunk night out, but the more...
Yeah.
I mean, there's posts on Buy and Sell literally every day about someone being mugged
yeah.
or
yeah,
kind exactly, of yeah. someone taking a photo of someone. And I think I saw one about someone going on a jog and someone was taking a photo of them in a park.
Yeah.
Along there's break-ins on a daily basis.
Along those yeah. lines, and I don't mean to sound like in a like step off way, but we are SU Equal Ops and Welfare Officers, and there's only so much that we could do in sort of preventing.
Of course, no, of course, of course. It's more just the like, how do you, I suppose, work with the community officer?
Work with the community officer, but not only the community officer, but Nottingham like County Council. Like that is probably the key to it all. And our Police and Crime Commissioner here, all of these people that we're speaking about are accessible, but we just need to sort of approach them, and it will be addressed. But again, it's the same if we want change from Nottingham, because that's technically what we're talking about with regards to Lenton, because it's not owned by the university. It's just an area that we've all chose to live in. It's the same pressures that we got put on the university. If students want change, they need to be first like make everyone aware of what the situation is, and then after that we can resolve it. With Lenton it'll be the same. We gotta go, maybe it would be a help if we went as a union, as a university, to the council saying this is the issue, we need it resolved, as so many of our students from Nottingham are living here.
We're, you know, single individual people, and a lot of the time if we approach, you know, big organisations and big government organisations, they simply will say, well, like, I don't, like, what do you want from us? So in a lot of ways, it is absolutely about petitioning first within the university and union and getting them on board with what you would like to do, and then all together going, because as much as we can put pressure on things, I do not have, nor does Miles, nor does Kat, have the same capability that a union and that the union and the university do. It's the simple fact that if Nottingham City Council and the police are being told by one of the major kind of economy bringers to the area mm-hmm. that stuff needs to be done, stuff will be done. If we say, oh, some students are getting robbed a lot and there's a high rate of crime, we need something done, they'll say, oh, and what their response has been typically is, well, students need to take care of their own security. Mm-hmm. And we as a university need to, and a union, come together and say, students have been doing that, it's not effective, more needs to be done.
Moving away just from the topic of Lenton, Kat, you mentioned an interesting kind of point on your manifesto about like a home away from home thing to do with like acclimatizing people to Nottingham.
Yeah.
How do you think it would actually help with the integration between like international students and current students, and like what kind of things would you be running?
Okay, so the event would be aimed particularly to first year and international students. So then you've got people who are, both of them will be new to the city in different ways. Some might be new to the country and the city, or some just new to the city. So I think in a way this event would be having information about transport in Nottingham, so like the Nottingham City Transport and the tram service and how they can get around the city, and also just general information, kind of like we do in the Welcome Fair, about the sort of businesses that are available in Nottingham, but in a less, I don't know, not in the first few weeks when everything's so hectic and there's so much information, in more of a relaxed setting where students can like talk to each other about where they've already been in the city and like getting to know it a bit better. So that's kind of my main thing. I was an international student myself in the Malaysia campus, and I just know that when you first move somewhere new, you've got your course to think about, finances, everything. And for me, I would think I would have enjoyed an event like that to get to know the city a bit better.
Miles and JL, you both talk about mature students and postgrads, which we will come back to. However, Kat, as mentioned, talks about first years and international students. How would you guys as welfare officers help those people, especially first years? I think that is a big issue. International students as well, speaking to the international officer candidates on media day, there's clearly so many problems that when you're from like the UK you don't really consider, like storage, for example. So what would you guys do to help that?
Going to, I guess we start first with first years. The approach I was talking about earlier was like long-term strategy for, this is the mental health, not so much equal upside thing. Having a long-term strategy, part of it would include training student-facing staff. I think that's something that me and JR both flag up, because they're the ones who are most likely to make contact with first years and likely to see their progression and see where they could sort of the earliest point of identification for any mental health issues, because currently at the university we do have sort of staff in halls, however their training, it's a grey area. I don't want to say too much because I don't know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not, but that sort of thing. With international students, I've spoken to a large, like, sort of international body and gone, hey, what do you guys want? Like, how do you feel? And Kat's idea of a home away from home is an absolutely phenomenal idea. I personally wouldn't have thought of it myself, but it does sort of hits the nail on the head with how do we integrate international students but not making them feel uncomfortable in the process and sort of isolated, because it's so easy to sort of segregate a group as opposed to integrate a group. So here's a bunch of international students, how do you make them feel comfortable? It should be no, how do we bring them into the community and let them live the experiences that we already do here, like in England? And so something like home away from home, it would be something that would be amazing to implement despite which one of us three get it. There could be sort of numerous ways around how we could integrate international students, but I think the best way to do it is not to presume what they want, but to ask them what they want.
Do you think there would be any merit in, for example, introducing an international role to JCRs in first years, like in halls?
Yeah, so with JCRs at the moment, there are a lot of roles, but we're having a really bad sort of engagement with JCRs at the moment, so we would need to sort of re-promote and re-engage JCRs to actually do what they're supposed to do, because when we joined in first year, JCR committees were like almost full, but going around campus now they are almost empty, because JCR sort of elections were almost as competitive as these elections, but they've really sort of lost their sort of run. So sort of re-engaging JCRs, an international officer would be sort of a great idea. If it's your own idea, then definitely
I'll run next year.
Yeah, please run. But also speaking to Dennis, who's running for international officer, you'll get to meet him. Fantastic guy. If you literally spend 5 minutes with him, you'll learn absolutely everything you need to know about integrating international students. So I think it's safe in his hands in that sense.
JR, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I do. So the first thing I'd like to say is that it's a brilliant point brought up about kind of the integration of first years and international students. Again, I'm going to come back to this point that the people who struggle the most with it are people who don't live in halls in first year, in catered halls in first year. It's a lot easier to integrate into a society when you're having dinner with a group every night, when you're going out, when there are organised nights. That kind of, if you don't go to, you're kind of a bit kind of ostracised. Further related to that, it's a lot easier to integrate if you're a student who wants to go out, who's used to drinking, who's used to that culture. If you come as a first year or just as an international who's not used to that and doesn't want to partake in that, it's something that's been flagged up again and again. Those students are constantly left out. It's why kind of, you know, the cat's whole kind of home away from home thing is really, really good, and focusing that on having small groups. Often if you read kind of and chat to first years and internationals, you don't participate in the kind of normal social atmosphere where there's drinking and going out. They struggle to find other people like them, and having small focused groups in areas like in halls and other such areas and kind of faculties is really, really important, I think, to tackling that specific problem.
I want to kind of pose a hypothetical question here. JR, you brought up a brilliant point about kind of first years and having not been in catered halls. Mm-hmm. So obviously, September this year, we saw the issue with Beeston Hall, mm-hmm. Which URN investigated. And what we found was that lots of students had been put in hotels for Freshers' Week. Although speaking to the SU, they claimed that they had kind of offered taxis and stuff like that. Speaking to people in the hotels, this was just untrue. So hypothetically, if this happened again, how would you guys address this from a welfare standpoint?
So I think that, well, I would hope that all the officers together would be as outraged, because if this has happened once, for it to happen again is actually like ridiculous. It goes beyond
the point. I think for it to
point.
Happen in the first place. Just,
when, because I remember hearing about it and someone had to explain it to me like 3 or 4 times, because I genuinely did not understand how, and I still don't, and I still believe that there are answers that need to, there are questions that remain unanswered and people who've got away with something that just doesn't make sense to me. People have fundamentally failed at their roles. So if it were to dare happen again, it would be to the point that I personally, and I'm sure that every kind of most of the officers who would come into power would agree with me, that kind of to the point of walking out and saying, we will not continue to perform until this is done, day and night petitioning in person to the university, because at that point it goes beyond the students' union, it goes to the university and saying, we've had enough, clearly you have brought too many, something needs to be done, there needs to be some form of compensation, these people have been adversely affected greatly, I cannot continue in my role until this is changed, and I won't go away until that happens.
Miles and Kat, quickly, do you have any comments about that?
Yeah, I think meanwhile, while things would be, if it did happen again, if things were being sorted in that time, you needed to, like either one of us would need to make sure the students were supported in that time, because during the time where process is happening, students are still in that situation. So I think making sure they're aware of like all the welfare services that are available, that they know where to go if they want to speak, I think that's important, as well as obviously trying to solve the issue as well.
Miles?
I think it all goes back to the point of having transparency in our SU, whether it be Equal Ops, whether it be president, any field, anything, we just need to bring back transparency, because a lot of the time we only hear the results of what's been spoke about, but we don't understand any of the decision-making processes that led there. And I think that's so important to be able to sort of agree with and be able to be unified as a union, as opposed to a select group of individuals who are making uninformed choices. And the fact that you called it a hypothetical question is not so unhypothetical, considering the fact that I know SB are planning to sort of double their size. Speaking to them today, it's sort of very clear that their services are not intact or able to be able to take on an additional however many thousand students it is. And so this role starts in July. I think that's something that would be the top of our priority list, is, okay, so if this were to happen again, or if the university haven't thought this through properly because of business ventures or whatever their interests are, how can we sort of put our sort of provisions in place to make sure that those students, despite the circumstances, have the best experience they can have.
Welcome back to Your Question Time with your Equal Opportunity and Welfare candidates. We've covered a lot of topics today, kind of safety on campus and in Lenton, mental health services, sexual health services. But now we're going to move over to what JR and Miles, you both address on your manifesto, which is kind of mature students, postgrads, and also students who have like caregiving roles as well. Kat, I know you don't mention this, but obviously if you have any comments, then please do. Chime in. Obviously, we do have the mature student network and a postgraduate officer role. So how would both of you guys work with these people to address your welfare concerns?
Speaking to Tom Leach, who does a mature student network, and Cassie Yu, who does the postgrad, we uncovered a lot of issues and a lot of places where we could be doing better in terms of sort of mental health and sort of all of the welfare side of things as opposed to Equal Ops. Out of term services, it's been sort of thrown about that the only sort of available services out of term is an email contact, which is absolutely like crazy, considering that most of our postgraduates, which is just under 10,000 here, are here for the whole like year. Like, they don't go home. This is home. This is where they live. This is where they sort of like do everything, learn. And so sort of increasing sort of the services that we have out of term would be sort of a major step in the right direction.
What kind of services would you want to introduce then?
A lot of people think that it's sort of like unreasonable to say, can we just have like a dedicated counsellor towards our postgraduates. A lot of people find a lot of things unrealistic, but it's not unrealistic. It's about how much you believe in it, and it's about how much pressure you put on. Also, in term, a lot of our postgraduates are teachers, and so they've been trialing sort of like feedback sessions, and feedback sessions on what we could do better, and group counselling sessions. But a lot of the postgraduate feedback from that is, I don't really want to be in a counselling session with someone that I'm teaching. And so by making it sort of only them and sort of exclusive to postgraduates, it'll give them a sense of one community which they're struggling with at the moment, because even during campaigning you go, why is the postgrad only at 3% turnout, where can we find them? And the answer around is, I don't know. And so sort of promoting that community, and by giving them sort of like their own exclusive services, will just go a long way in sort of supporting our postgraduates, because they're under a huge amount of pressure at this university.
So is that kind of what you mean when you say in your manifesto about development development and aiding like the development of the community?
Yeah, so in order to sort of develop the community, we got to sort of like develop the support systems that they have around them, because in order to sort of grow, you need help growing, if that makes sense. And part of that is maintaining good mental health, because a lot of the time in when you're trying to teach, when you're trying to learn, when you're trying to have your next piece published, there's a lot of things going on, which means that it takes away from sort of your social element, and it takes away from being able to network and build bridges and gaps between people. So by supporting them in that sense, it gives them an opportunity then to sort of go back into that.
How would you address the situation that, I mean, postgraduates ranges from master's students who have, it's kind of a combined master's, so they've been here for 3 years and then they do a combined master's, to PhD students, as you said, like what I've had tutors who are postgraduate students. So how would you, or how do you think that needs to be addressed? That obviously some people have been here for 3 years, mm-hmm. so may know the services available. Some people yeah. obviously come as a PhD. There's a difference in age as well.
Yeah.
So how do you think that needs to be addressed?
Talking to Cassie Yu, who's our current postgrad officer, ways in which we could deal with this is in their sort of like integration into university, there's no sort of immediate signposting. So like you were saying, we can't take for granted that just because someone's been here for 3 years that they're aware of the services, because even at undergraduate level, there's people in third year who don't have a clue who to go to. So we can't just go, you're a postgraduate, you must know. So in their sort of initial sort of jump into the university sphere, they need to be signposted, they need to be told this is what's available, this is what could be used to help support you, because at the moment we don't have that. We only have sort of a brochure or a leaflet that's often disregarded, whether that be because you can't be able to read it or because it's not very interpersonal, if that makes sense. So just making sure that at that very first stage of them stepping in, they are supported. And because postgraduates don't actually always start at the same time as undergraduates, things like welcome fair and all those different sort of things, they don't often attend or don't have the chance to attend. So by sort of like promoting it out of the sort of expected times would be something that I'm sure would help a lot of them, and a lot of them would benefit from.
Kat, do you think your home away from home could in any way kind of transfer to postgrads at all?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that the information, as Miles said, is if these students have just come to Nottingham or whether they've been here for 3 years already, like everyone would be welcome to it. And I'm still finding new places in Nottingham now. Like, it's something that I think definitely would be an event that would be open to them, and something that hopefully would be useful and help to build that sense of community that we've been talking about.
Jay, you talk a lot about mature students. So what really do you propose in terms of helping this network?
Yeah, so I am actually a mature student myself, but just. So I am part of the network, and I see the wonderful work that they do, and I see the wonderful work that Tom Leach does as well. So I think one of the most important things to understand is that with mature students, the overwhelming majority of them are working at the same time, and there needs to be this understanding that for them the experiences that they want from university are different. They still want a sense of community and they still want a sense of belonging. So what it is, it's the case of kind of exploring how to make kind of sports teams, societies, and other activities more accessible to mature students. Because I feel like there is, as a group, the Mature Student Network, particularly this year under Tom Leach, has gotten a lot stronger and hosts a multitude of events where mature students can come together and kind of feel connected. I would say that there's still a struggle for those students to then, for mature students to be able to partake in activities that they enjoy, that they should have access to as students at the University of Nottingham. I think it's not just because undergrads are sort of, and I'm sorry, not mature students are like, oh, we don't want mature students about. I think it's a lack of understanding of both sides. I think mature students are almost like, I don't know if I want to come into this space. And people who aren't mature students are like, we don't know if they'd want to come into this space. So I feel like there's a conversation sometimes that's not happening. There are a lot of teams and kind of societies that very readily welcome mature students, and those that do are better for it, because mature students bring with them a kind of maturity often, and a sort of sense of kind of strength that sometimes I think, you know, normal students struggle with. You hear a lot about the fact that some societies, in particular like LARPing, talks about the fact that they kind of have almost like a family structure, and that some of the mature students are seen as kind of very, very helpful to them. So I think that kind of encouraging mature students and people who aren't mature to interact more and grow more is really, really important.
Quickly, Miles and Kat. So, JR, as you said, we actually have a mature student here at URN, and he often talks about how he felt the university was quite a hostile environment for him as a mature student. So how do you think we quickly should address that?
I think what JR said was absolutely brilliant. A lot of sort of solvent issues is to open up the conversation. A lot of things that we're all here campaigning for today, we do not speak about enough, and not enough people know about the problems with it. Because I'm sure if a lot more mature students, firstly, and even undergraduate, well, sorry, they are undergraduates at times, but even people who aren't mature students, if they knew that there were hostilities and there were tensions, I'm sure that they'd do their utmost to sort of prevent that from occurring. Because here at Nottingham, it may seem that there are tensions arising, there may seem that there are things not being done, but that's because we've not attempted to change them and we've not tried to. So opening up the conversation, like JR said, is the first step in doing that.
Kat?
And I think, yeah, as the Equal Opportunities full-time officer, it would be really important to feel that to support the part-time officer, whoever that may be next year, and help to bring their priorities and their aims into place. And if they feel that, yeah, working with them, because they're obviously part-time, but helping them to know what the priorities are, like on the manifestos this year, like childcare problems and flexible memberships for societies, and helping them to achieve those aims would be really important as the full-time officer.
Okay, well, thanks so much, guys, for coming on. Do you quickly just want to have like a couple of points summing up your manifesto?
Yeah, I think my manifesto would covers a lot of points about the welfare services that already exist at the university, and having more collaboration between them, and having, yeah, the ability to have more collaborative projects so that they could reach a wider audience at the university, because they already do great things. And yeah, just basically building on the collaboration as well as all the other points that we've discussed earlier.
JR?
Yeah, so I focus in terms of welfare quite a bit in suicide, in the way in which we deal with suicide, and looking at being more transparent about that, which is super important. I also have a focus on equal opportunities, which I often feel is ignored, and acknowledging that those things, that welfare and equal opportunities, can and should work together, and if one isn't right, the other won't be.
Miles?
Yeah, just sort of focusing on our welfare services, seeing how we can transform them and not sort of leave them in the state that they are, and just not forgetting those who aren't often recognised in university, really.
SU Elections Question Time. What do your candidates stand for?